Close meeting to order. Let the record reflect it is 10 minutes after 11 on Tuesday, February 5th, 2008. Present our Representative Gatto, Johansson, myself, Newman. We have Dahl and Dugan in a budget finance subcommittee. Keller's been excused. He's a member of the Federal Access Committee, and Representative Lynn is out, excused absence because he's ill. But we don't need a quorum today. We're not hearing legislation. We're hearing an overview on the commercial passenger vessel excise tax. We're going to have the Department of Revenue here today. We have the Deputy Director, Joanna Bales. Representative Dugan is here, for the record. So, Joanna, just go ahead and start. Members do have a copy of the presentation. Again, this is just kind of an overview of how this cat tax came in and where it's going in the Department of Revenue, and to have help communities get a better understanding of this, if they're an affected community where these cruise ships come into. We need just a little more understanding on the process. This is not a hearing on whether this is, you know, we're going to have this. That decision's already been done, so I don't want to get into that one. Representative Johansson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I first want to thank you for holding this meeting. My constituents are a little bit confused as to, you know, we have a couple different funds here and how it's collected and who can apply. And I just want to thank you for holding this informational meeting and thank Ms. Bales for coming and explaining what exactly we're dealing with here.
Thank you, Representative Johansson. Ultimately, this is the people's money, and we represent them, and we're trying to make sure that this is everybody understands what's going on. Ms. Bales?
Okay. So for the record, my name is Joanna Bales. I'm the Deputy Director of the Tax Division within the Department of Revenue. As most of you are aware, there was an initiative that was passed in August of 2006 with an effective date of 12/17 of 2006. That initiative, I'm going to briefly go through the initiative. It had several revenue provisions as well as some other provisions that weren't revenue generating. The revenue provisions, first of all, this initiative imposes a $46 commercial passenger vessel excise tax on passengers who are on large cruise ships, and those are ships that have over 250 berths. The initiative also levies a tax at the rate of 33% of adjusted gross income on cruise ship gambling activities that are conducted in state waters. It subjects the cruise ship companies to Alaska's corporate net income tax. They were exempt from the corporate income tax in the past. And it assesses a $4 per passenger Ocean Ranger fee. That fee is collected by the Department of Environmental Conservation, not the Department of Revenue.
Representative Gatto?
It may have been answered. When you count berths, you only count passenger berths or crew berths also when assessing whether it's over 250 berths?
Yeah, Representative Gatto, through the chair, it doesn't include crew quarters. It's just for passengers. Paying passengers who've contracted with the cruise industry to be transported from one place to another. That's the definition.
I understand that. I'm just looking at number one that says where we're dealing with which ships qualify, and it only says over 250 berths without addressing the word passenger. Is that because we're using just a short version, or is that actually in the initiative that refers to passenger and not just berths?
That's a good question. Now, I believe it is the 250 passenger berths, and it doesn't include crew quarters.
Okay. Representative Dugan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions on this. It says, okay, if you're over 250 and we think it's passenger berths, then you pay the $46 commercial excise tax. Does the $4 Ocean Ranger fee also only apply to vessels of that size?
The $4 Ocean Ranger fee, yes, that's correct. It only applies to passengers on those vessels.
If I might,
go ahead, Representative.
When we say that we're levying a tax on 33% of the on gambling activities, does that only apply to vessels of this size, or does that apply to all vessels?
That the gambling tax does apply differently, and there's a federal law that actually provides a definition for that, and it is where it's a cruise ship that provides berths, overnight accommodations for all of its passengers. So there isn't a size limit, but if there are overnight accommodations provided.
Thank you. Just one more then. And then would it be all the cruise ship companies paying the corporate income tax as well, without regard to how big their boats are?
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Ms. Bales.
Just quickly, I'll just go over the other provisions that were in the initiative. Department of Revenue is not involved in the administration of any of these provisions, but there were some, like I said, some other provisions that weren't revenue related, where cruise ship operators are required to provide more information, and I believe it's the Department of Environmental Conservation, regarding the type of wastewater that they're wanting to discharge into state marine waters. It authorizes citizen lawsuits. It enables a person who provides information leading to enforcement of the law to receive a certain percent of the fines imposed. And I believe those provisions are administered by Department of Law. And it opposes additional requirements on disclosures about on-ship promotions. And I believe that that provision is administered by the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
And that each department, I know we're listed in the in our overview pages, so if you don't have that, let me know. But thank you for explaining which department manages each one of those. Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I get hung up on words sometimes, but enables a person who provides information to receive 25 to 50% of fines. What if we have 25 people reporting the same incident? Each of the 25 gets 50% of the fine. That means we're going to be out money trying to pay the whistleblowers. If indeed this is not shorthand, or is that the exact wording in the initiative?
That's not the exact wording. It is shorthand. So, and that would be a consideration for Department of Law.
Yeah, I think it's a good one for the Department of Law on that one. This is Department of Revenue doing this overview.
So I'm going to talk a little bit, just everyone talks about a cruise ship head tax. That's the short name for the commercial passenger vessel excise tax of being $50, and where that comes from is the $46 per passenger excise tax and then the $4 Ocean Ranger fee. And as I said, Department of Environmental Conservation administers the Ocean Ranger fee. So the rest of my presentation will focus on the $46 excise tax.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you. Just a quick question before you go on. The law actually says $4 a head. It doesn't say up to no more than that. I mean, the $4 has got to go to the Ocean Ranger program under the law. Is that correct?
The way the law is written, there are separate provisions in separate titles of the Alaska statutes.
Gotcha.
So,
thank you.
Yes.
And on that, Representative Dugan, if you wanted to look into that a little further, you might ask just if that actually covers those costs to DEC. I know that you're interested in that type of thing and making sure you're tracking that money.
Yeah.
Representative Dotto?
Just for clarity, $4, I'm sorry, the Ocean Ranger fee, is it $4 per person or $4 per berth?
It's actually, the way it's written, it's drafted as $4 per berth, but there is some interpretation there. It's my understanding that it's being collected per person.
You could travel with empty berths. You could have two people in a berth or so. So it's enforced as...
Only if they were really good friends.
Well, it is per person.
Yeah, Representative Goddard, that is my understanding, the way that fee is being levied at this time is per person. Even though you're correct, the language does discuss per berth. It does state per berth.
And I think it says there, you know, it's inclusive of the $50 per person head tax, so...
Yes, that's my understanding, the way the industry is assessing the fee is $50. So what the Department of Revenue is responsible for is we administer and collect all these different taxes, the corporate income tax, the cruise ship gambling tax, the commercial passenger vessel excise tax, and then in addition to collecting those taxes, we're responsible to account for those in separate accounts and disperse those funds as directed by the legislature. We also are responsible to draft regulations to clear up any areas within the initiative that needed just some additional clarification.
And Ms. Bales, Do you believe that there are restrictions on the way those funds from the head tax, can they be spent? And what are those restrictions? You said you're responsible for the disbursement of that, so what restrictions or what sideboards do you have on that?
Chair Newman, I do have quite a few slides, and we'll talk about the disbursements and all the things that we believe that the money can be spent for.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, question.
Representative Johansson.
I didn't see in the rest of your presentation a total for corporate net income tax and the gambling tax. Do you have numbers of what we're talking about here?
Representative Johansson, through the chair. I'll discuss that and the reason why there aren't numbers there in just a moment.
Yep,
okay. And that moment would be right now. As part of the corporate net income tax, and just a little bit of brief history I'll give you, is that what this initiative did was it makes the cruise ship industry subject to the corporate net income tax. In the past, they were subject to the corporate net income tax. We, at the Department of Revenue, actually had a case where we assessed the corporate income tax against a water transportation company, which is what the cruise ship industry is. And that particular case went up to the state Supreme Court, who said that those water transportation companies are subject to the corporate net income tax. This body, the legislature of Alaska, put in an exemption for water transportation companies. And I believe that happened, I think it might have been in the year 2000. And so those water transportation companies have been exempt from the corporate income tax. What this initiative did was repealed that exemption for the cruise ship industry and for water transportation companies. So now they are subject to the corporate income tax, just like all other corporate taxpayers in Alaska. The money that is deposited from the corporate income tax is deposited in the general fund, just like all other corporate income tax revenues that we collect. The first tax returns are due April 15th of this year. We did not do a revenue estimate, and the reason for that is we have absolutely no historical information about this industry. As I said, this industry was subject to the income tax, but they didn't pay it until, you know, we put out an assessment and basically forced the issue to find out whether or not the industry was liable for the corporate income tax. And then with the way the statutes went and the Supreme Court ruling, we never did get information about the industry. So again, we're hesitant to make any kind of estimate of what that revenue will be without having any historical information about an industry.
Representative Johansson.
What's the timeline after the 15th? Do you anticipate you're going to be able to process those numbers, and just so we have an idea?
The way that the corporate income tax works is that the tax returns are due April 15th, but tax payments are due March 15th. So we should have a pretty good handle on the amount of revenue because the payments are due March 15th. So we should have a handle on how much, I would guess, by the end of March.
Okay, thank you.
Do you have any, obviously you've been collecting this tax for a while now?
The corporate income tax we've been collecting corporate income tax from all other industries, but not from the cruise ship industry.
Yeah. I was just trying to look for an estimate.
Right. I mean, I understand that, and we'd like to have an estimate as well. We'd like to know how much we think this will bring in, but until we actually have payments made and returns filed, again, we have no history.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Representative Gatto?
Two questions. One, it's a global company, so the corporate income tax is based only on the Alaskan operation? Or, since it starts out in a different state, is it proportional, or is it the entire, that voyage?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, the way that the corporate income tax works, it's an apportionment formula, and for all corporations other than oil and gas corporations, they have to calculate that apportionment formula under what's called a water's edge, meaning that they look at all companies that conduct business in the U.S., and then through a formula, they apportion their activity to Alaska. So let's say they conduct operations in California, Washington, and Alaska. You would take a look at the amount of property, payroll, and sales they have in each of those jurisdictions, and whatever percentage they have of those three items is how much income would come to Alaska.
Question number two is, because you will, on April 15th, know what the corporate income tax is, do you intend to go retroactive and apply the information you now have to years previous to establish what the tax that you intended to collect was?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, there is no retroactivity in this bill, so there's no revenue that's required to be paid, so we wouldn't do any calculations back to previous years because the tax wasn't due at that point.
But was there a corporate income tax for previous years but that wasn't paid, or was it paid but you couldn't verify the amount?
The corporate income tax, this particular industry wasn't liable for corporate income tax in previous years.
Thank you.
We're getting a little bit away from the $50 head tax there too, so we'll try and stay on that. That's what we're talking about. Go ahead, Ms. Bales.
Unlike the excise tax, which I'll talk about in a moment, the corporate income tax, there is no provision in the initiative for revenue sharing to communities, to municipalities that are impacted. So again, the corporate income tax goes to the general fund. We did draft regulations for water transportation companies. Those regulations were effective October of 2007. Next, I'll talk a little bit about the 33% cruise ship gambling tax. We do have regulations that are currently out for public comment right now. Those regulations focus on the administrative provisions as far as where to file, what to file, who must file your returns. The comment period ends this week, and we hope to have those regulations in effect within the next, I would guess, 45 to 60 days. The way this...
Joanna?
Yes.
On that, Ms. Bales? Your regulations out to public comment, so you went to the communities. Give us a little bit of idea on how that public comment went. Did you get a lot of response from public comment? And
Chairman Newman, in this particular regulations project, because we focused just on the where to file and how to file and didn't deal with aspects of the legislation that would affect communities, we just did a public notice and we didn't have public hearings. We just sent the regulations in their draft form out to all interested parties and are awaiting comments. And to my knowledge, we haven't received any at this point in time. However, generally what happens is we'll get several comments on the very last day of the public comment period. So
that's kind of what happens when you don't really advertise it much. Go ahead.
The tax, the way the tax is calculated, it's on the adjusted gross income that's received from gambling activities which are conducted in state waters. So if you think about that, you would have a cruise ship that can start a voyage, say, either in Canada or Seattle, and they conduct gambling activities throughout the waters off the coast of Washington State, off the coast of Canada, and then also in Alaska waters. So they do have to apportion the gambling income that they earned during that voyage to Alaska and then pay 33% of that income to us in the form of a tax. The adjusted gross income is defined as gross gambling proceeds. They can subtract any prizes that were paid out and any federal and municipal taxes that are imposed on that type of income. To my knowledge, to our knowledge, there isn't any other taxes imposed on the gambling income that they're going to earn at that time. We expect that this will be an annual return. As with all other income tax returns, there's generally an annual filing. Those first returns will be due April 15th of this year. So at that point in time, just like with the corporate income tax, we would be able to make an estimate of how much we think this tax type will bring in revenue to the state. This revenue is deposited. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Is this, have there been collections by the federal government on gambling in state waters? Or I know in the 90s we had at least 1 year of data. That's probably not, probably stale enough that it's not going to help. But are we kind of going blind here again until the 15th as far as revenues?
Yes, Representative Johansson, that's correct. We, again, have no history of this industry and what their business is or how much income they get from this activity. So we're very hesitant to try to come up. We would really just be pulling a figure out of the air. So.
There is 1 year of data that I recall. Is that valuable whatsoever? Because contrary to public opinion, I've actually worked on legislation that was not perceived as friendly to the cruise industry, and that was taxing the gambling in state waters, a piece of legislation from the 90s. I think there was $900,000 or $1 million that was collected. Is that of any value? Or I guess it's easier just to wait and see what it is, I guess.
Well, I think the concern there is the industry has just ballooned in this state since then. So as far as extrapolating, that would be somewhat difficult.
Needless to say, it'll be sizable. And when you get to the commercial vehicle passenger tax account, could you explain what that is?
Yes.
Thank you.
So the corporate income tax is deposited in the general fund, and then the gambling tax is deposited into a new account that was established by this initiative called the Commercial Vessel Passenger Tax Account. It is a subaccount of the general fund. And I will talk with that about that very specifically here in the next couple of slides. The third tax type within this initiative, and probably, I mean, what we're all here to talk about today, is the commercial passenger vessel excise tax, which is the $46 per person, commonly known as the head tax. It's levied on the cruise ship passenger. It's levied per voyage. So if you take more than one cruise to Alaska, you would have to pay this tax more than once. It's collected by the cruise ship owner or operator and then remitted to the state by that entity. It's due by the end of the month following the month in which the voyage ended. So if you have a voyage that ends in May, the taxes are due to the state by the end of June, so on June 30th of the next month. A voyage is defined as a voyage that's a cruise that lasts longer than 72 hours, and that isn't just 72 hours in state waters, it's the entire voyage. So if it starts in Seattle, I mean, that is when the clock starts ticking on that to determine whether or not it meets the criteria. And then the cruise ship industry also must report the number of passengers at each Alaska port of call, and that's for the distribution of the taxes that go into the commercial vessel passenger tax account, which we'll talk about right now.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the taxes levied per passenger as the ship enters state waters, is that how it's done?
Representative Dugan, that actually the way it works is that it would be levied per passenger after the cruise ends, because that's when the determination is made as to whether or not it's a voyage that met the criteria if it was 72 hours. But generally speaking, the cruise ship industry does know how long those voyages are, and it's our understanding they collect the tax up front at the time that those voyages are booked. But then they aren't required to provide that money to us until a month after the voyage ended.
So just in a case in which boat comes from Seattle, 12 passengers jump ship in Juneau, the boat goes minus those 12 passengers on the rest of its route and goes out. The tax is levied on the total number, or the total number minus the 12 who leave the voyage?
Representative Dugan, through the chair, if those 12 passengers spent 72 hours or more on that voyage and they got off in an Alaska port, that they would have to pay the $46. What you're talking about actually would come into play when you determine the revenue sharing to the different ports of call.
So. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, as I discussed previously, we are also at Department of Revenue responsible to disperse the proceeds, account for how much money we have. And again, we have the initiative set up a couple of different accounts. The commercial passenger vessel excise tax is deposited into two accounts. basically, the first one is the commercial vessel passenger tax account. 75% of each $46 goes into this account, and that would be $34.50 per person. The other account, which actually is a sub-fund of the commercial vessel passenger tax account, is 25% of the $46, so $11.50 per person goes into the sub-account.
And Ms. Bales, who established this breakup?
This was established in the initiative.
Okay.
This slide, what this shows is the cruise ship, the 2007 cruise ship season, the revenues that were collected by the Department of Revenue. There were over 1 million passengers who visited Alaska this year on cruise ship voyages that lasted longer than 72 hours, and we received approximately $46.4 million, and we've accounted for it with the breakout where 75% goes to the commercial vessel passenger tax account, the other 25% to the regional cruise ship impact fund. That's how much we collected, and that's where the money was deposited.
So just in a nutshell, I mean, to make sure this is clear, the $50 head tax brought in $46.4 million to the state general fund.
That's correct, Chairman Newman. That's correct.
Representative Johansson.
Mm-hmm. And the, of course, once we get the numbers on gambling, that will add to the 34.
Yes, there is a footnote here that says this doesn't include the gambling tax revenue. That revenue goes to the commercial vessel passenger tax account. None of the gambling tax revenue is deposited in the regional cruise ship impact fund.
Thank you. So, Ms. Bales, when this was established, I know that some of the communities that feel they're more heavily impacted, the communities where the cruise ships dock. Some of them have a $5 docking fee per head, and I know there's been some discussion about some people who said, well, I don't want to get off in that community, so I'm not going to pay it. But I don't want to get into that. But if is there sideboards in each one of these accounts that maybe communities who are more directly affected by this, or has there been, I guess, sideboards for each one of these funds set up along with these funds, or are they just basically somewhat open right now? There's a fund there, and there's no specific sideboards or use for that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, there are some restrictions on some of these funds when it does come to communities that have their own passenger fee. And I will talk about that as well as when we get to the description of ports of call and who is allowed to participate in that.
Thank you.
The disbursements, now through the initiative, the disbursements that come out of that commercial vessel passenger tax account, that's the $34.8 million or 75% of the revenues that are collected. The way the initiative reads is that revenue is dispersed to communities under what we call the first five ports of call rule. So we would do revenue sharing basically to the first five ports of call. As I said, the gambling tax revenue is deposited in this account. It isn't distributed to the first five ports of call. And then what isn't distributed to the first five ports of call remains in this fund along with the gambling tax revenue, and the initiative says that the legislature may appropriate the money from this account for the state-owned port and harbor facilities, other services to properly provide for vessel or watercraft visits, to enhance the safety and efficiency of interstate and foreign commerce, and such other lawful purposes. That's a pretty wide open statement in our minds. Basically, there's this pot of money that will be sitting there for these projects around the state.
And such other mm-hmm. lawful purposes can be pretty wide open. Representative Johansson.
Where is this quote located? Is that a state statute? Is that federal language? Where does this guidance come from?
This is the actual language from the initiative, which is in State Statute Title 43, Chapter 52.
And how does that comport with the Maritime Transportation Security Act language?
It's my understanding, Representative Johansson, that it actually is pretty, it coincides with the language in that bill in the federal law. and that was intended by the drafters of the initiative.
If I may, Mr. Go ahead. Chairman, to quote the PL 107-295, reasonable fees charged on fair and equitable basis that are used solely to pay the cost of a service to the vessel or watercraft. That seems pretty specific, more specific than the initiative language. And I know there's some difficulty from your perspective, since revenue doesn't distribute, they collect. This may not be your bailiwick, but at some point that's a question that we're going to have to wrestle with, I think, the two separate languages here.
Would you mind reading just the first part of that? Reasonable fees or?
Representative Dugan.
Reasonable fees charged on a fair and equitable basis that, A, are used solely to pay the cost of a service to the vessel or watercraft.
Thank you.
And just for the committee members, I wanted to try and do this like till noon, you know, maybe five after, because of the budget finance subcommittees are coming. And I have invited some young ladies from 4-H program
to come and
talk a little bit about that. We'll gavel out after this, and I invite them to come talk to us a little bit about what their goals in life are. So,
Mr. Chairman,
a little bit of a timeline. Representative Dugan?
Thank you. What I hope is a quick question. When we talk about the first five ports of call, are we talking about per voyage then?
Yes, so
the revenues from that voyage are distributed to the first five ports of call of that voyage.
Representative Dugan, through the chair, we actually pull it all together, but basically that's what happens when the distribution is made.
Thank you.
So Ms. Bales, if a ship only goes to three ports of call, mm-hmm. is that, do they get, just take that all that money and divide it up, or?
Then the first three ports of call would receive $5 per passenger, and then the remaining amount that didn't go to the next two remains in that account for
reappropriation.
Yeah, reappropriation for
So is
projects.
is there any mm-hmm. stipulation for communities that are affected beyond the ports of call? You know, and Matsu, the Representative Gatto and I are in. I mean, we have a lot of tour boats or buses that go through and things like that that definitely affect the communities. So is that recognized anywhere with any of this money?
Well, depending upon your interpretation of this initiative, that would come from the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund, where those communities are impacted by visitations from passengers off of cruise ships.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman. And I think that's really the question between the language in the initiative as well as the federal language, which is, I know it's an issue to a lot of people around the state where this money can be spent, but that's a question that still hangs out there. But I think the federal law is pretty specific. Anyway, we'll wrestle that gorilla another day.
We'll ask judiciary to look at that one, or maybe we'll take a look at it later. Go ahead, Ms. Beals.
Okay, I'm going to talk just briefly about the first five ports of call. If you look at the way the initiative was set up, and if it's the first five ports of call, $5 per person, that'd be $25 per person, which would be more than half of the $46. So the expectation when the initiative was drafted is that more than 50% of this would go to those communities. However, what we found, as you stated, Mr. Chairman, is that most of these cruise ships don't visit five ports. They visit three, and of those three, two of those ports have their own fees, so they don't share. So our estimated disbursement for the first five ports of call is about $10 million each year, as opposed to being the potential $25 million. So it's significantly less than what was expected at the time that the initiative was drafted.
And they can receive that money on top of, even if they have their own $5 docking fee, head tax?
Not under the first five ports of call rule, no. The way that the initiative works is that a port of call must be a municipality or a borough. It can't be a private dock, say. It must be a location where passengers disembark or embark, and it cannot have its own passenger fee, which is similar to the state fee.
Representative Johansson?
Thank you. On the first five ports of call, if I remember correctly, in the initiative, it referenced in splitting the $5, $250, mm-hmm. if it's a city within a borough. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And in the borough of Ketchikan, we have two cities, Saxman and Ketchikan. And I'm not sure if that was a drafting oversight or Saxman basically is written out of the language of the initiative. It says a city, a single city within a borough, and we have a community that's heavily impacted. In fact, that's pretty much their only economy out there is tourism. And I'm wondering if, again, you're not the distributor, and it makes it difficult for you to be in this position. And I recognize that, and that's one of the problems with this initiative is we don't really know who's supposed to be giving the money back to the communities. But I'm wondering if, is that anything that you guys have looked at?
What we took a look at is where the ports themselves, when the cruise ship docks, what city is it located in? In the case that you're talking about, those cruise ships dock in Ketchikan, the city of Ketchikan, not in Saxman. And Ketchikan has its own passenger fee, so they can't receive money under the first five ports of call rule. But the borough itself can because it doesn't have a separate fee and it isn't unified with the city. So when we made a disbursement, we did make a disbursement to the borough, the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. And I believe that the initiative with the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund, the intent there were for places like Saxman, who are impacted by cruise ship tourism, to receive funds in that case.
And I've noticed we've got further mm-hmm. language, further clarifying that towards the end of the slideshow here. But Representative Gatto, if you can try and go through here real quickly.
Is Saxman in the same borough as Ketchikan?
Correct.
So that the borough receives $250. And Saxman and Ketchikan can then share the $250. Am I correct?
Representative Johansson might have an answer for that.
No. I guess that's the question. Does Saxman therefore generate some income by being in the borough and therefore receiving borough funds, which I think is $250?
Well, if you look at the language in the initiative, it says that these communities that receive the money, they must use that money the same way the state's required to use it, to enhance cruise ship tourism. So the borough needs to look at how they're going to spend that money, and if they do need to spend it in an area like Saxman to enhance the cruise ship tourism, then it would make sense that that money can be spent there.
I would probably mm-hmm. assume that the folks in Saxon get a lot of their business from the tourist industry, so they would be part of the enhancement program, mm-hmm. I would hope.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, I've read the language of the initiative, and in the spirit of the co-chair of resources who staunchly defended the will of the people, I read the language in black and white plain, and it's confusing to me. And various attorneys that have looked at it also call into question Saxman's place. But I think you're right. They could definitely work with the borough. But again, I think it's a vague writing of the law, and it's something that may have to be fixed next year.
And just on that point, I just kind of want to put it to a close then, is, you know, there's a lot of things that we do in this building that we have to come back and take a look at. Or, you know, and initiatives are the type of thing, too, with the public initiative process, where sometimes things happen and we have to go back and iron them out a little bit. And I think that's very well known throughout this building. So we had, that's not today's issue. Ms. Bales?
Okay. One of the other provisions in the initiative was that if you are a community that receives money under the first five ports of call rule, you cannot also receive funds from the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund. That's the way the initiative is written. Quickly, just to show you, we did have a request by a previous committee. They wanted to know how much money we collected each month. So these are collections by month for the 2007 cruise ship season that come up to the $46.4 million. So as you can see, June, July, and August are our heavy cruise ship months. Now, as far as the commercial vessel passenger tax account, again, with the first five ports of call, we did an appropriation in December of 2007. Well, we actually did it. We disperse money in 2007 based on an appropriation that the legislature did in the FY 2008 budget. That appropriation was for us to disperse to the first five ports of call. We did do that. Of the $3.8 million that we collected in fiscal year 2007, we dispersed, if you take a look at the next slide, we dispersed $744,000. So it was significantly less than 50%, as I discussed. And this slide shows the different communities that received money. And you can see where we have the Ketchikan borough there that received money, but the city of Ketchikan did not. In Kenai, there were some dockings and Seward, so the Kenai Peninsula borough shared in the money as well as Seward because those they are not unified. So those were the total disbursements of those proceeds that we collected in fiscal year 2007. Of the remaining amount that we collected for the 2007 cruise ship season, this is the expected disbursement to communities that we will make. Of course, it's subject to a legislative appropriation in the fiscal year 2009 budget. And I expect, there is a, in the governor's budget, there is an appropriation to the Department of Revenue to make this disbursement. So we expect that disbursement will be made next fall.
Ms. Bales, is there any recommendations in the governor's and in capital budget or anything on this money?
In the governor's budget, no, there isn't.
Okay.
There
so
isn't.
The governor's budget right. doesn't address any of these funds?
No. It appropriates all the funds to the Department of Revenue to disperse in accordance with the initiative.
Representative Johansson.
Is it common practice for the Department of Revenue to be in the fund dispersal business?
Representative Johansson. Well, we disperse funds as directed by the legislature frequently, but as far as making the determination of what projects should be funded, no. The Department of Revenue is not in the business of doing that. That's not something we've ever done before, nor do we have the expertise to do that.
No. I was just going to ask, so you don't, you're not out there hoping that you get to be the ones to do it.
That's correct.
Has there been any discussion at a cabinet level with other departments as to what sort of plan the third floor has to distribute this money?
We have had some discussions about it, but one of the things last year when this initiative passed, myself and a group of other people from the Department of Revenue talked to other communities, Ketchikan and Juneau specifically, about their fee. And one of the things that we found out that I think is important is that the city of Juneau actually, under city ordinance, put together a task force, which included members from the industry, to look at projects that could be funded from their fee. Now, you made that comment about the federal law and how specific that is. Well, if you were to look at that federal law in light of what Juneau does with the money that they receive, and you were to read the federal law very narrowly, then Juneau has gone outside the federal law with a narrow interpretation. But I think because of the fact that they work on approving projects or have input from the industry, that that's been very helpful for them. So, and to my knowledge, at least at the point in time when we talked with Juneau, there had been no lawsuits filed by the industry saying that they had misused that money. But they do have that committee is put together under city ordinance. It isn't something that...
Could you proceed, Ms. Bales?
Pardon?
Just let's proceed with the yes. rest okay. of the show.
But what I want to show here on this next slide is just the money that we have remaining in these accounts. So the commercial passenger vessel tax account, we received $34.8 million. Of which we are going to disperse $744,000. Well, we dispersed the $744,000 to the first five ports of call, and the amount of $9.2 million is available to be dispersed next year to the first five ports of call, which would leave $24.8 million in that account, in addition to the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund of $11.6 million. So currently there would be $36.4 million for additional projects outside of sharing with communities.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so I can keep rough track of these numbers as they scamper around these pages, you say the amount available to disperse is $9.2 million, but you don't expect to disperse that all under the first five ports of call. Is that correct? We expect there to be a balance in that account when you're done.
The $9.2 million is the amount we expect to disperse under the first five ports of call.
Okay.
We do expect to disperse that entire amount.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
What I'm trying to show here is the $24.8 million that will remain in that fund after disbursement to the first five ports of call, in addition to the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund. And again, then the gambling tax revenues will also be in this account for use for appropriation.
A lot of money.
A lot of money.
So if you look at the language of the initiative, I mentioned that there would be about $24.8 million remaining in that commercial passenger vessel tax account. And that is revenue not shared with the first five ports of call. And the initiative says how those funds can be used for state-owned port and harbor facilities, et cetera. You know, we believe those funds can be used for state projects in specific communities. We're not tasked, Department of Revenue isn't tasked with drafting regulations for the use of these funds. So we will not be drafting regulations dealing with this remaining account.
So maybe we could even try and save some of those funds. Go ahead, Ms. Bales.
Save?
Representative Dugan.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johansson.
Wrong meeting.
Joanna, you've said the first five ports of call, we're going to run that through, $10 million back to the communities. $24.8 left on the table. Is that money eligible for a community that receives the first five ports of call to receive appropriations out of that pot of money?
I believe so, yes. There isn't any prohibition.
Thank you.
Representative Gatto.
Just in round numbers, at 1 million passengers, a $5 fee to the first port of call would be $5 million, correct?
That's correct.
And you're only going to probably have to pay to two ports of call because Juneau and Ketchikan already have their own fees, so that's $10 million.
Correct.
And you have available $9 million. Is it possible you'd run short?
Well, we actually have available the $34.8 million. So we wouldn't run short. We distribute out, and then whatever is remaining, it stays in that account. So we've already distributed $744,000, and then in addition to the $9.2 million that we expect to distribute, so we expect to distribute $10 million.
Question.
Got it.
Is there any language that says a port of call doesn't require a visit? It's just a port of call. So you have to actually visit to qualify.
You do have to actually visit. We did draft regulations for the first five port of call, and you do have to visit the port in order to be eligible.
Thank you.
Then we have the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund. There's currently about $11.6 million sitting in that fund. Disbursements, again, must be appropriated by the legislature. Funds under the initiative can only go to municipalities or other governmental entities that were impacted by cruise ship activity. And again, those funds can't go to communities that received money under the first five ports of call rule. So as there is $11.6 million sitting there to go back to communities that were impacted.
Thank you, Ms. Bales. Any other wrap-up questions on this? I think that's been pretty informative, and I think we can I think probably most members are going to take the information that you provided back to their offices and sit down and digest some of this and look at the overall budget and how that all works. But definitely some better information, I think, than what we had before we started. Representative Johansson.
Thank you. I guess the biggest thing I get out of this presentation is that revenue in their role of what they do best, collect, is tasked by the initiative to disperse and it's not really, it's not something that they do. It's not something that they sound like they want to do. And I think there's a vacuum of anybody stepping up except for our friend from Haines, and I don't want to talk about other legislation, but people are working on some way to distribute this money. I haven't heard anything from any other department as to what the plan is, and we're collecting the money, and I don't know what happens. What happens if there's no legislation passed by this body to direct the disbursement of funds? No other department has stepped up to administer dispersal of funds. I guess we could just appropriate it through the Finance Committee. But, you know, is there a better way? I mean, is there, other departments have project rankings. You know, there's all kinds of different ways. I'm just curious if the administration has, and again, you're not the person to ask because you're the revenue person, but I'm just concerned that there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of structure to getting this money back to the communities other than just the will of the Finance Committee. And I guess until I'm chairing the capital budget, that concerns me a little bit.
I can see where it might.
I think that that's a legitimate concern. Something, again, I think we're going to have to work out here, and certainly with the finance people, see where we go on there. Any other questions? Thank you. And I'm going to gavel out now. And again, we're going to, like, we've got some 4-H students here that want to come talk to us a little bit, so we'll give them, you know, 5 minutes of time. And thank you, and that ends today's meeting on this issue.